Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. Hope you all enjoyed the break from UFC action over the weekend. Still lots went on. PFL had a couple of nice events with a lot of finishes there, but otherwise a fairly quiet weekend on the news front, allowed everyone to recharge a bit as we push forward into the second half of the 2025 MMA calendar. And that returns this weekend, UFC Fight Night in Nashville, headlined by Derek Lewis versus Tolshin Teixeira. Spoke with Derek Lewis actually on Tuesday. That interview is up over on MMA Junkies YouTube channel. Always a good chat with the Black Beast, and plenty more of chats happened in recent days as well. Of course, leading into the mega UFC 318, maybe just mega in terms of the main event next weekend, headlined by Dustin Poirier versus Max Holloway, the trilogy bout. Spoke with Max Holloway in what I believe was his first lengthy one-on-one interview since he lost to Ilya Topuria back in October. Really appreciate his time. And honestly, I've spoke with Max so many times over the years. We kind of got into the game right around the same time at like age 20, and he's always been good. And I thought that was one of our more enjoyable chats. And I think he's in a really good place going into this fight against Dustin Poirier, who we have also spoken with several times leading up to this retirement fight happening in New Orleans. That's going to be a huge one for me personally. Both those guys go back a long way with them, and going to be kind of watching through the fingers as I did the last time they met in that epic fight in Atlanta. But before we get to UFC 318 stuff really in depth, that'll be next week. We'll have a great show before I head out on the road. But as far as this week's episode, we are going to have the great Alan Joban joining us, UFC analyst, former UFC welterweight, and we are going to go over some of the stuff that's on the horizon here for Q3, these next few months coming up. Of course, a couple pay-per-views, a month off of pay-per-view in September, but a lot of stuff brewing, a lot of recent news, the UFC White House event that is allegedly going to happen, a lot of talk around that, and many other narratives going on in the sport right now and in the coming months. Alan and I will touch on some of the things that go top of mind, so we'll be a widespread conversation, but a lot of fun stuff, a lot of interesting conversations. So hope you all enjoyed that. Please make sure to like, subscribe, rate, follow, comment, anything you can do to show support to the program. It means a lot as we keep growing here on the Bonfire. I will take a quick break and be right back with Alan Joban. Back here once again on the Bonfire Podcast, it is UFC analyst, commentator, former welterweight Alan Joban. Alan, good to have you back, man. How have you been?
It's good. Good to be on, man. I was running a little bit behind today. I was doing, if you can see from my shirt, if you're watching this show, the Good Fight Foundation. Obviously, Dustin is in training camp, or you know, preparing for fight week here in New Orleans and Louisiana here. But every year he does this, man, the Good Fight Foundation. They do a bunch of stuff for the community here in Lafayette. But one thing that he does every year is the backpack giveaway, the back to school. And every year seems to get kind of bigger and bigger. So I just came back from this hot as hell warehouse where, you know, we had probably about 20 people with the Good Fight Foundation packing 1,200 backpacks, just loading them up for kids at school. The news stations were there kind of covering it as they do every year. But it's just a fun cause to be with. Like every year the cars just line up. We go to a dealership, a Scott car dealership here in Lafayette. And I mean, there's just cars wrapped around the block. As far as you could see, not only to get their free backpacks, but all the kids also want to come take a picture with Dustin Poirier as well. So anyway, it's a fun thing to be a part of. He's doing it again this year. So we just got done wrapping up about 800 backpacks. We have about 400 more to load up tomorrow. And then the giveaway will be sometime in August, I believe.
Yeah, I believe that's what he said. I had him on the show a couple weeks ago, and they said they're very, very excited for that. And yeah, it's coming soon, man. I mean, you're out there. Is there? We'll talk more about the fight itself a little later. But what's the energy like? You know, a little over a week out from the UFC, coming to Louisiana for the first time in 10 years.
It's a lot of people are realizing right now, I think, Mike, that like we're probably not going to get the UFC here again, and it's the sad, unfortunate truth. They weren't going to come back probably, right? I mean, the last time they were in Louisiana was 2015. I was supposed to be on that card. DC was supposed to be on that card. Dustin Poirier stayed on that card. Me and DC got pulled off, me to injury. DC had to go to another fight. But it just didn't make sense for the UFC to go. They're being offered so much money to go to all these places, even you know, Salt Lake City, Utah. I think they get paid like $10 million or 20. You know, they get all this amount of money. Saudi Arabia just got deep pockets to come to Louisiana. It financially didn't quite make sense unless you have a star like Dustin Poirier making his final fight, The Last Dance. It made sense. And even with all these things that kind of aligned, they still had to jump through a lot of hurdles. I mean, there was a lot of back and forth trying to make this thing happen, but fortunately it was made. I mean, the UFC even doubled down on it and brings in Power Slap the night before, the first time that Power Slap has ever in the United States been outside of Vegas. So it's a big weekend in Louisiana for fight festivities. I mean, the commission in Louisiana just sanctioned Power Slap, bare knuckle boxing, a lot of things. There's talks right now of like China starting to bring fighters over here and do boxing events. So hopefully you might start to see Louisiana be a hotbed again for not just MMA, but like, because I don't know if UFC is going to be here anytime soon, but other type of combat sports in the future.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. That's good to hear they're opening up and the scene will increase. And who knows, you know, what kind of tentacles this event can have, inspiring, you know, some kid who wants to be a fighter and sees it live and all those things. That's how it all works. But yeah, we will definitely talk about UFC 318 as we get into our Q3 storylines here. That's a big one. But lots of other stuff to talk about, Alan. And I will give it to you. I know kind of the homework assignment I gave is just come up with a few things that are interesting to you over the next 3 months here as we roll into the second half of the 2025 schedule. Had a nice little break there for July 4th, but it's go, go, go for the next several months here with events pretty much every weekend. So I guess I'll give you the ball first. What is something that has your mind, whether it's, you know, going on outside the cage or inside the cage, as far as what's coming up here in Q3?
Yeah, well, for me, I mean, aside, which I think we're going to get to after a while, the White House news. I mean, that's a whole nother storyline. But aside from that, The most like realistic, feasible fights that I think right now is now the new biggest fight you could possibly make in the UFC. And before, if you would have asked me that, Mike, a couple of weeks ago, before the John Jones retirement news, I would have said John Jones, Tom Aspinall, biggest fight you can make. That is no longer on the board that we know of. John Jones is no longer on the roster. Maybe he is coming back, maybe he isn't. But feasible fights, Ilia Topuria, Islam Makhachev, the biggest fight, in my opinion, that you could possibly make in the UFC. Not only just are these the number one and number two pound-for-pound fighters in the world, this is a star-driven sport. This is a number-driven sport. You look at the followers that these guys have. Islam Makhachev has like 10.5 million followers on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Ilia Topuria, after that last performance, he was gaining what? Were you paying attention to this? He was getting like 1 million followers a day or something in those couple of days following the event. He's now more than Islam. Ilia Topuria is like 11.5 million. These are realistically kind of the two biggest stars in the sport. I know some people don't think that about Islam, but he does have the numbers to back it.
I completely agree.
Yeah, but sometimes people feel like Islam, in the case of Islam Makhachev versus Dustin Poirier, they need a strong B-side. That's why they brought in Dustin Poirier. They need a strong supporting cast. Now you have a guy like Islam who has a stronger supporting cast than him with Ilia Topuria. So for me, it's what are the next two fights, their opponent-wise, and how do those fights go? For me, personally, if I'm picking, I need to see Armand Sarukian get this opportunity. I think that's the toughest fight for Ilia Topuria. There's a lot of talk about Paddy the Batty and all this stuff. But for me, it's jumping the line. He's a star. And I've heard other news outlets speak about this is the biggest fight you can make. I don't agree. Mike, I mean, are you with me on this? Paddy's a star and where he's at. And internationally, he's known. But I hate to be so much by the numbers, but this is a guy with about 4.5 million followers, right? Compared to a guy like Islam Makhachev or somebody like that. I mean, there's much bigger fights in UFC. I don't think that's the biggest fight you can make. So why, if it's not the biggest fight you can make, would he now jump the line over these other guys, the Justin Gaethjes, the Armand Sarukians? As much as Gaethje is a legend, that's not the fight that I want to see. personally. I think if he deserves it, I've got if he's given it, I think that there's nothing wrong with it. It's a fantastic fight. But Arman Tsarukyan, when Islam was the champ, I think that was the toughest fight matchup for him. Ilya the champ, I think Arman Tsarukyan is, again, the toughest matchup in division for anyone there. That's the fight that I want to see. And depending on how that fight goes, if Ilya is able to get past him, then I think you make the super fight with Islam Makhachev. Obviously, he's got to get past
Jack Della Maddalena.
Thank you very much. Jack Della Maddalena in the welterweight division, which I'm not so sure is going to be an easy fight for him at all.
No.
Looking how Jack Della Maddalena looked in his last performance, being, you know, I ran into Islam at the airport the other day, and when I was flying over to Azerbaijan, and it was the craziest thing. I'm walking to my seat, Mike, and I see a guy on the side of me, glance at the corner of my eye. This guy has a beard and no mustache, right? And I'm like, oh, you know what part of the world we're at, right? But I didn't really distinctly recognize him. We're walking to the same seat, and it's almost an awkward walk where I'm like, this guy's walking right on the side of me. We're eyeballing the same two seats. We sit down side by side. I slowly look over. He slowly looks over at me. He goes, I know you, brother. Alan Joban, how are you, brother? I go, oh, my God, it's Islam Makhachev. What's up, man? So we chopped it up. The nicest guy. It's the first time I've ever encountered him in person. Mm-hmm. And we spoke, though. And what he told me was, I said, how much are you weighing right now? And he told me, you know, in kilos or whatever. But it roughly came out to, I think it was around 187 or something. And he said he couldn't put on any more weight.
Yep.
And that was kind of my argument before even speaking to him, that he always had a slight, not that his technique wasn't there, but he always had a slight weight advantage on all of his previous opponents. Now he's going into a fight where he's fighting up against guys that could stuff takedowns, hit harder, and he's going to be in the deficit in the weight range now. He's going to be, because you got to think Jack Della Maddalena is probably going to be walking into the octagon that night around 190-ish, right? 195, 194, I would imagine, something around there. And if Islam is walking in there at 187 and he's at a 6 to 7 pound weight, that could be the difference maker in him getting that takedown on the second or third try. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be a tough fight for him, but I do think that's a fight that would be the best option for the UFC. Islam wins, Ilya wins, you make the super fight. That's the biggest fight you can make this year. So that's what I have my eyes on going into this third quarter.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there. I mean, I guess if we could get the stars aligning there, like I know Ilya said he's going to fight December, maybe in Vegas on that final pay-per-view of the year. But if you could somehow line it up where like maybe Islam fights in Abu Dhabi end of October and Ilya fights at MSG like beginning of November, and then you could have them kind of on the same timeline. Maybe you launch a big card in early 2026 for a new TV deal or something. That would be a huge fight. So yeah, there could be a lot of stuff aligning there, but I guess a few things that you said there. I spoke to Islam and I think his only interview since the fight in January a few weeks ago, and that pulled numbers. I think that did like 500,000 views over on MMA Junkies YouTube channel. So like a lot of people were interested in that. He said similar things, that he's having a hard time putting on the weight and keeping it on. And it's like kind of messing with him a little bit. Like he's trying to figure out what to do here because he doesn't
some doubts in his head, right? He thought it was going to be easier. He told me, and he probably told you the same thing, that the weight came on fast at first, and then it tapered down. It kind of stopped. He was so used to having to cut weight that putting on that extra 5 pounds and not having a diet was easy. But now he's kind of hitting a point where he can't gain anymore. And to what you're saying, I think it's kind of messing with him.
Yeah, he wants to put on that mask. So I don't know. I saw Michael Bisping say like on his show that he thinks this is a bad idea. I think kind of based off those comments, like that maybe he might be biting off a little more than he can chew out welterweight. But I love that he's going for it and all that stuff. We'll test his greatness in this fight against Jack. And, you know, if he can beat a prime, just became champion, Jack Della Maddalena, I think that gets his number one pound for pound spot back from Ilya, because I think that's a better second division title win than Charles Oliveira at this point and where Charles is at. So we'll see how that goes, if they can juggle it. But to the other point, what you said there about who will fight Ilya, I agree, I think, with Armin. What I said coming off the back of that is like, I think the fight, if you're trying to give Ilya another highlight reel quality win, no disrespect to Justin Gaethje, but you know, you get the legend, another legend on his resume before Justin goes away. Like that could be a good moment to capitalize on. But I think for the public, that's the least competitive fight. I think Armin is the most competitive fight, but maybe the hardest sell to the public, even though they're doing their work here, trying to go back and forth on social. So maybe they're building something. And then to your point on Paddy, he kind of, I think, the heat around them facing off a press conference. Like, I think that would feel pretty big by the time we got to fight night. But like you said, the least deserving of those three, probably in terms of what they've done in cage.
Mike, how much did, when Dana said that he wasn't a fan of what happened that night, like how much did that play into the mindset of what the UFC is thinking already, right? I mean, it has to make you think that that's not the fight that they want right now. That's not that the fight they're thinking. Why did they bring him in the cage? In my opinion, it was kind of a tell, a sign that Patty is not on the board right now for that matchup. And I agree with you. For the UFC, although Armand Tsarukyan may be the most deserving fighter out of the guys that we just named, do they want the most competitive matchup against Ilia Topuria, or do they want to give him biggest name value, Justin Gaethje?
That's why I think it might be Justin.
The passing of the baton, and it's a sad part of our sport, but it's a part of our sport where the biggest name, the older fighter, now passes the baton to the younger fighter. And it's not like Ilia needs any more push, but this would be another big feather in his cap, obviously. A win, a possible knockout win over Justin Gaethje, rather than a close back and forth grappling match with Armand Tsarukyan.
100%. Yeah. If you look at the resume in 5 years and you see that streak of Volk and Max and Charles and then Justin, you'd be like, holy crap. I don't think you'd have the context of, you know, Justin was 2-2 in the last four or whatever you want to put it. So we'll see what decision they make. I think an X factor here. We'll get a little bit more into Holloway versus Poirier later, but Max Holloway, I did an interview with him this week, his first one also since the Topuria fight, and he said, you know, you're only as good as your last fight. I want to go out there and do something spectacular, and, you know, I have my history with Ilia. He walks around with that BMF belt. If you want the real authentic thing, like, come get it in a rematch. So, I don't know, maybe if Max Holloway does something amazing, he could be the fourth entrant into this conversation. I've so many title contenders at lightweight. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And I saw Max was saying recently, like, take me out of the rankings at 45. Yeah, I'm not going back.
Yeah,
he's done. I get. I mean, Max is the guy that it seems like he's been on this sport for so long. And he's still, what is Max, 33? I mean, 33 years old. And he seems like he's up there with these other guys, the Poiriers and Gaethjes that are 36, 37, getting around that age. But he's still the younger guy. He's just been competing since he was such a young age. But he himself knows that he doesn't want to cut the weight anymore. His body type is starting to change. When you get in these kind of mid-30s, it's harder to make that weight cut. Your body starts kind of changing on him, and he feels just better at 55. So he's another guy, like you said, he's in that category, that weight division. 55 always seems to find a way to have a resurgence. Like, some guys move up in weight, some guys move down in weight, but they always seem to almost find their way back to 55 at some point.
Yeah, very true. I guess let's just get into it now. I mean, we're talking about it. Max and Dustin, this is next weekend. This is a huge fight. I mean, I know some people think there's more to be desired with the entire lineup, but this is a can't-miss main event, to the all-time greats in our sport. And obviously, Dustin's farewell. I guess, you know, you're wearing the Good Fight Foundation shirt. Just personally, on your side, to see Dustin walk away now, the honesty with which he is explaining his motivations and his reasonings for wanting to do this are all extremely sincere and admirable to me. But for you, knowing him, being in the same city, like, what's kind of been your thoughts on him as he's gone through this process leading into the final fight?
I'll tell you this, Mike, like, I moved back to Lafayette 4 years ago, and I immediately went to the gym and linked up with Dustin. And I knew I wanted to train with him, hang out, talk fighting, just, you know, two guys from the same city that live a similar lifestyle. And since I moved back home, since after the Conor McGregor fight, he's been hinting at retirement. Mm-hmm. He's been hinting at it the entire time. Every single fight that he would win or lose, he's like, I might have one more. I might have one more. I really think Dustin would have retired a long time ago if these opportunities would have not kept coming. Yeah. He gets to fight Conor twice in a row, the biggest paydays of his career. He fights for the belt, Charles Oliveira. He's given what people thought was a very tough lose-lose situation against Benoit Saint-Denis, but he knew, and when I spoke to him about it, I go, dude, this is you. This is a given fight. Dustin knew he could fight recklessly and not be worried about it because of the skill set that Dustin has. He's not known for grappling, but he's the only guy that submitted Michael Chandler, right? He's a guy that's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's a guy that is savvy enough to defend the chokes that Benoit Saint-Denis was trying to apply, but still be able to throw these haymakers and knock his ass out like he did. So he can go out there and kind of have a highlight reel type of fight and resurge his career. Another title fight comes this way with Islam. It felt to me, he was trying to retire these last 5 years. He just couldn't. The fights kept getting bigger and better and more profitable. I've never seen him, since I've been talking to him pretty frequently these last number of years, at the point where he is now, where he is, a matter of fact, it's done. It's done. This is a BMF. This is at home. This is the retirement fight. They're giving me this fight for these reasons. I'm having a baby finally. I'm ready to move on. His foot's been halfway out the door for a number of years now, but his foot is pretty much all the way out of the door after this fight. So if some people ask me, does he come back if he wins and they offer him a title shot against Ilia Topuria? As many times as he has taken those opportunities this time, I think he puts it away. I think he says, no, title shot, $3, $4 million, I'm good. I think he's good with it. His mind is in the right place. I talked to him the other day because I was in a situation where I knew my retirement fight was coming up. And the one thing that I remember most about it is making, like, absorbing every training camp as if it was his last. Like, and I would get done training and I would get in my car and drive home. And I go, wow, that was my last boxing session before the fight. That was my last wrestling session. And it, I don't know, for me, it was kind of profound. You know, every fighter is different. But speaking to Dustin recently, I go, how's camp going? He goes, bro, absolutely amazing. And I think he's in that same mindset as my point, that he's absorbing this so well. He's enjoying the process this time, you know, a lot more than other times, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to have him fighting at the best of his potential. I really think fighting at home could be detrimental to some people because of the pressure and everything. But for him, he's enjoying this process so much. I think we're going to get to see the best Dustin Poirier that he could possibly be at this age in his career.
Yeah, it does feel like that for sure. I was down there right at the beginning of camp in like mid-April, and he was already in good shape, said he was going to cut out, like, you know, even the one glass of wine he would have a week in this camp. Just wants to know, like, I did not do anything wrong in this final training camp and gave myself the best opportunity to win. And then, you know, you live with the result in that scenario. But yeah, I totally agree. I think he has done, when he was on here before UFC 317 breaking down Topuria versus Oliveira, I said, like, you know, you're going to get asked this question 100 times in fight week, so I'm just gonna ask it now. Like, if Ilia wins and you win, like, what's gonna happen? Is Joe Lee gonna be deleting Dana and Hunter's number out of your phone? Like, would you even consider it? And he's like, no, I think I'm done. So, like, I'm very good with the situation. So
he said, I think I'm done. I think.
Yeah,
he didn't say I'm done. Like I said, I'm thinking I'm done.
Yeah, but maybe come on, I'm speaking the way he speaks. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not going to try to force it upon the guy. That's why when we were just talking about who's next for Ilia, I mentioned, you know, Max if he wins, but not Dustin if he wins, because I don't want to do this to the guy. But
yeah,
you know, he's been saying a lot of the stuff like about his thing. He's like, how much work would it take me to get back to another title shot? I might have to win like 5 in a row, 6 in a row. I don't know if I have it in me to do that. It's like, might only need to win one, bro.
Maybe one. The toughest thing, and I was explaining this to my son the other day, is, and obviously you know this, the more you win, the more you get paid, the bigger the next fight is. And that's what makes it so tough for fighters to walk away. I think Dustin has been in this position, as I said a while ago, so many times now that he's okay with it. He's realized, I might win here, and I'm going to have a BMF strap around my waist, and they might call me. And they might call me and offer me something that I can't refuse, but I think he's accepted that already. And so that's what makes him calm enough to go, look, these are some things that might come up, but I'm okay with moving on.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It would be, I wonder how the UFC would feel like they're putting on this whole event on his behalf. I think, you know how they are, like Hunter and Dana, all that there. If they're doing this for you to be like 3 months later, like, oh, I'm actually not retiring, but you threw this big retirement celebration for me. Who knows if that rubs them the wrong way, but
yeah.
Money talks. So who knows? We will see. But I guess from a more technical side of things, trying to put, you know, your relationship with Dustin aside, what do you just think of this matchup? Like he is 2-0 against Max, but completely different circumstances. This is this the longest spanning trilogy in UFC history, over 13 years between the first fight and the third fight. So like completely different guys. Max was short notice the first time. They were both short notice the second time. It was supposed to be, I think, Dustin versus Tony Ferguson for that interim title. So like nothing was ideal. This seems like the fullest version of maybe both of them will get. So how does that change your perspective on things?
It doesn't change it much. I still would lean towards Dustin, even if I wasn't friends with them, because of the history that they've had together, because of the amount of cage time that they spent in there. They know each other so well. Not a lot in either of their game has changed that much. Neither one of them, they found what works at the highest level. And when you get to that level, it becomes just getting in shape, staying sharp, and being healthy for the fight. It doesn't, let me try some new tools. Let me add this. They're not adding a bunch of new different tools. They're not changing up their game plan. There's tactic strategies of when to press on the gas and when to kind of steal around. But tactically or skill-wise, they're not really adding much to their arsenal. And when I take that into account, which I believe is to be the fact, to be the case, I still lean towards Dustin. Now, this is the biggest opportunity, in my opinion, that Max Holloway will ever have to beat Dustin, not only because it's their last fight, but this is the oldest Dustin Poirier, obviously, that they've ever fought. Dustin Poirier is now one step out of the door, has one foot out the door, and is older in age. So could he be lost a bit of a step in his game and explosiveness and all those things? Yes, that's a real possibility. And I think that is why the odds makers have Dustin as a small dog right now. I think Dustin is like a plus 100, plus 120 dog at the moment, something around there. But I think Max Holloway at this point, as we're speaking, is a slight favorite. And I think the odds makers, that's what they're taking into account. Max Holloway is still somewhat in his prime time of his career. Dustin Poirier has passed that. But what they're not taking into account to me that much is Max Holloway is a guy that was never knocked down in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And he just got knocked out very badly. Once that happens, I can tell you from experience, once you've been KO'd or TKO'd, your chin is never quite the same. And so how well does Max absorb those shots in this matchup where he's always been able to absorb them? And we've known Max is just like not only two of the most likable guys, him and Dustin in the UFC, but guys that wear damage very well. And they don't really get buzzed. They're rocked. And they can continue. That's why they have these dogfights in there. How well does Max Holloway absorb shots after being not only knocked out, but knocked out? And how well does Poirier absorb these shots at this age in his career? But I would still lean towards Poirier and his toughness and his resiliency inside the octagon more so than the younger Max, because of once that light goes out in your brain, the concussions or the off switch rather happens a lot easier. And so I think Dustin has the opportunity in this fight that maybe he hits Max with a couple shots. I don't think he puts him out. I think this goes to the decision, but I think we see Max a little bit wobbled, a little bit buzzed, where we haven't seen that before in other fights.
Yeah. Super curious observation just to see how that goes. You know, obviously God forbid he goes down the same road, but you know, BJ Penn was like that forever. He wore the damage really well. And then when he finally got put out by, I think, Ian Rodriguez for the first time, it was like easier and easier and easier every time. So, yeah, what you said there rings very true, and wondering how that'll go. I mean, they both seem to want a war. This is what Dustin said to me a few weeks ago. He said, in true knucklehead fashion, I'm going to stand there in the middle and trade with Max, and we're going to bleed and put on a show for the last one. And I told Max that quote, and he said, hearing those words, hearing you tell me that, excites me. If it's a war he wants, it's a war he is going to get. It's going to be a bunch
yes.
of knuckleheads in there. So that literally like gives me the freaking tingles, goosebumps. Like, it'll be a BMF fight, but yeah, we'll see how Max holds that damage, because you know, he had that streak forever of not being knocked down, but Dustin had him very much on the ropes in that second fight, and the cage, I think at one point Max bounced off it and it saved him from maybe being knocked down.
I think as much as Dustin wants and needs this victory to be able to sleep at night, mm-hmm. to have not only a win as his last fight, but a belt. You call it what you want. The BMF, oh, it's not a real belt. This, but it matters. It matters to fighters. It matters to fighters. If a promotion is able to, an organization is able to say, we think you're a BMF, and these are the reasons why, and we're going to put on an event because of, like, it means a lot to fighters. Some of the fans don't see it that way, but it does mean, I know it means a lot to Dustin if he would have that belt. As much as it would mean a lot to him to have that belt on his mantle as well underneath his other belt, and to ride off into the sunset with a win, to be able to sleep at night and just kind of feel like, yeah, champ, I'm a champ, like I'm a winner. Mm-hmm. You're not going through those up and down roller coasters of depression and stuff that comes off of a loss. I think a moment is bigger for Dustin as well, or at least equally as big. I think having a moment right there with him and Max where they're trading blows, they're going to war, much like the second fight that they had, much like when Dustin pointed at the center of the octagon in the end of the fourth round and Max Holloway kind of spit his water out. I'm coming. Yeah. You know what I mean? Those type of moments is what we live through the fighters for, us fans, us viewers watching this. And I think Dustin wants this win, but he also just, I think he knows that he wants this moment. He wants to be remembered as a guy that always was a dog in there. Just went and it was just so tough. always just stand toe-to-toe with the guy that brought made up the stand toe-to-toe and knocked the guy to Max Holloway. I think we're going to see some of those moments that night.
Yeah, I hope so. Last thing on this, because there'll be plenty more time to talk about it over the next week plus, but talking to Max, asking his like biggest motivation, this was his quote, "I'm 0-3 in one trilogy. I'm not trying to be 0-3 in two trilogies. That's the main thing going through my mind. The BMF cool title is cool and everything, and making history is great, but the main history I'm not trying to make is to be the man who fought two different trilogies and went 0-3. Extremely rare circumstances here. I couldn't find anyone else in high-level MMA who's gone 0-3 in two trilogies. I think Heath Herring went 0-3 versus Big Nog and then like 0-2 versus another guy, but not the same thing. I don't know. Could you even get inside Max's head? And if he does lose that, like, how would that impact his legacy when you look at those two rivalries with Dustin and Volkanovski?
I don't know if it impacts his legacy in a negative way, but it's interesting that you brought that up because it's kind of the opposite of what I was just saying about Dustin, right? And I don't know this to be true, but being the quote that you just told me about Dustin, that he's going to stand toe-to-toe, Max is a guy that's already been a long-time reigning champion before. He's got plenty of belts and on his mantle. He's been in those situations. He's got a BMF belt. So he's got all these accolades, but he doesn't want to lose another trilogy. He wants, and his career is still young enough where he knows I need this win because a win over Poirier and then he retires. Now I'm a guy in that conversation that we just spoke about earlier about Ilia Topuria and other huge fights and another pathway to getting to the belt again at the lightweight division. Maybe we see a Max Holloway that's a little bit more tactical, a little bit smarter, a little bit Dustin points in the octagon. And maybe we see him do a matador and then, oh man, let's fight this out. Maybe we don't see those moments on the side of Max Holloway. So it'd be an interesting dynamic if Dustin is willing to go out there and lay it all on the line. And obviously the legend of Max Holloway is willing to do that as always, but in a smarter approach where he doesn't want to get caught or give up a round. Yeah, I could talk this fight forever. Very, very interesting because they've both got so much at stake in different ways.
Yeah. Well, let's roll on here, Alan, to a thing it kind of parlays perfectly into it. And I know the White House card was on both of our lists just because it's such a unique thing. And like Bet Online, kind of an obscure online betting site, put out odds of who could headline this potential card. And actually, the two people with the shortest odds were Dustin Poirier and Max Holloway. I think they had Dustin at plus 250 and Max at plus 300. And then everyone else was, going back from there. I think John Jones was like plus 1,000 or something. I don't know how you put Dustin that high considering he's going to retire, but maybe Max here. So I don't know. What are your general thoughts on this before we get into who could headline?
So they were saying John Jones was a plus 1,000. So he was the least favorite to be a headliner on this card.
Lower odds, than them. The longest odds I think I had was plus 2,500, and that was Ilia Topuria.
So I see it the other way. I see if this White House card, and it just makes it such fun talking points when things like this happen. Trump is a guy that would do this type of thing. Dana obviously is a guy that would make this type of thing happen. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me think, oh my God, if there was ever a reason or a way to get a John Jones or a Conor McGregor back and both guys immediately raise their hand on Twitter, on X, and put themselves into the conversation. Wow. I mean, if that's what it takes, and they're talking about in a new broadcast year with a new deal done, and now we have two of the biggest stars in the sport coming back. Obviously, you couldn't put a Conor and a John Jones on the same card. It costs too much money. Mm-hmm. Neither one would realistically be fighting for a belt. I mean, maybe you could put John Jones in some type of title fight if he was going to fight Tom Aspinall, and Tom Aspinall got through Sitogan or whoever it was going to be. I don't think that happens. What I think is if the opportunity for John Jones to really come back, he says, Dana, I want to come back on this card. I think he looks for a fight like a guy with Alex Pereira. Mm. Listen, I heard Daniel Cormier say the other day, if they were to fight right now, it's probably good that for Tom Aspinall that they did not fight because he believes John Jones would win at this point because he's never been in those deep rounds. Yep. I don't believe it. As Daniel Cormier knows John Jones better than just about anyone, and I respect everything that Daniel says when it comes to fighting and these type of things. But I don't believe it. I think Tom Aspinall is the biggest, baddest man on the planet. Too big, too strong, too fast, too much knockout power, too much ground game. I think he runs through John Jones. I think he gets rid of John Jones in two rounds if they fought right now. Now we're talking about a year from now. John Jones is going to be 39 or something. Every day that goes by, John Jones has less and less chance of being competitive in these big fights.
He's posting videos on his Instagram stories of him opening his house garage gym and there's spider webs and shit.
He was blowing the dust off. You saw that too. The spiders crawl. I mean, it hasn't been that long, but all of a sudden the gym has been locked up for years, it seemed like. But I think something that brings John Jones back is Alex Pereira going up in weight. That's a very winnable fight for him. They're both around the same age. They're both at the end of their career. John Jones would then have a sizable advantage, literally a size advantage, where he would be at a big deficit against a guy like Tom Aspinall. And then you know what they would do? They would make up a belt. It would be the presidential belt. It would be some type of crazy belt.
Trump title.
Yeah, the Trump title. And as crazy as it sounds, it's like, why not, though? It doesn't matter. Like, are we going to the White House every year? Probably not. This is going to be a one-and-done thing. It's going to be some crazy event. Throw some Medal of Honor type of gold belt around one of their waists and make it a title fight. It doesn't have to be for a legitimate belt. So you could make these titles with John Jones versus Alex Pereira. Conor McGregor, if he was the guy that would headline it, I don't think you could give him a possible title shot, but I think you could give him some type of made-up presidential belt, the Trump title, and you do it against Michael Chandler. That's the most winnable fight for him with the biggest name. Either of those two fights with either of those two names would be who I would pick to headline the White House card.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, it'd be awesome if they could get either of them back. We're going on years at this point. I think it's like, 4 years this weekend since Conor last fought. And then, looking at over 2 years for John. So I don't know. Do you think it's even realistic, or are we all just dreaming here that either of these guys could come back?
It's so tough to say, right? Because I'm somewhat gullible when I see somebody say, I want this, right? Then I believe them because something inside of them said that. But we've seen it too many times with Conor. So Conor's somebody that you can't really take what they're saying very seriously. But John Jones is somebody that I think that you give him the right matchup. He doesn't want to fight Tom Aspinall, in my opinion. He doesn't want to fight him for whatever reason. Maybe he knows it's a bad matchup, or maybe he just doesn't want to give him the credit and pass the torch, as we were saying earlier. But I think if you gave him a winnable fight with a big enough name like Alex Pereira, he would come back. So I could see John Jones doing it.
Yeah, me too. I think he's the more likely one. It doesn't seem like he's going to be able to keep his head on straight without like this being involved. I mean, his retirement was 2 weeks and he said he re-entered the pool. I haven't seen evidence of that yet. We'll wait for the next testing database update to see if he's actually tested.
Yeah, keeping his nose clean, literally. Keeping his nose clean for an entire year.
Yeah, it's hard to put those expectations on either of those guys. We don't know where they're going to be a year from now. So that's why I'm guessing they're in the plus that 1,000 range. And then, someone more reliable like Max Holloway is maybe the shortest odds, because if he signs that contract, he will be there to fight on that date. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I'd be curious to see how they would format this whole thing, like who's allowed to go.
Yeah.
Like, can anyone buy tickets? Like, what's the whole setup going to be like? And we know the UFC and Dana has been extremely anti-outdoor venues, but you would have to imagine that would have to be some sort of outdoor setup with a, thing above it.
A tent or something above it. And I know Trump said something like 25,000. There's no way. There's no way. We're not building an entire Staples Center out there. They're going to put 4,000 chairs out or something like that and some bleachers, and that'll be it. I think it'll be a small kind of private event with specific type people that were invited there. I think it'll be somewhat the opposite of what Trump said, a big spectacle arena. I don't see that happen on the presidential lawn. Who knows?
Yeah. Once you get into the logistics, it's just a little too crazy. Speaking of crazy, do you think they would do anything like wild and out of pocket for this? Like there was a time where we were talking about Elon against Zuckerberg, or,
my goodness,
UFC to the CM Punks of the world. Like, would they try to maybe just as a weird political curveball, like try to get someone that could maybe resonate in that world? I don't even know what the options would be, but for a card like that, you try to do something freaky to like draw the casual fan in even further.
I say do it. If there's any time, if there's any fight that you're going to do it, why not do it on this one? I mean, this is going to be one of the most viewed fights ever if it does go down at the White House. And I saw Andrew Tate was a guy that threw his name in the hat to be out there. I kind of gave him, I didn't want to be that guy, like raising my hand. Oh, I'll fight. I'm an old retired guy. But like that shit, I would, what I'm saying? Like, you got to get, if Andrew Tate did it, I would, just saying, I would jump in there at 205 and fight this guy. But I think, yes, my answer is yes. You put a guy like that on there, you make it fun. I mean, they did a CM Punk. Let this guy, Andrew Tate, he has a kickboxing background. He's not completely green to fighting at all. He's, a longstanding career in martial arts. And that would be, to me, the kind of like the kind of fun card where, look, if we're putting guys that are coming back out of retirement because they want to fight in the White House, we're possibly, in just our opinion, putting up made up belts, the presidential belts and all these things. Why not put some influencers on there and really beef this thing up?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where they go from it. And I guess that leads me into my next thing here. You know, in 2026, who knows where something like this could be broadcast, right? Like, who knows what the UFC landscape will look like as far as television rights and all that stuff. I know I had asked Dana, I think in Miami, right when the exclusive negotiation window ended with ESPN, like kind of what the plans were. Could there be less events? Could there be more events? How could it be broken up? And he basically said, you know, we're leaving all options open, but hopefully maybe we hear something in July, August, September. We're right around that time here. What do you kind of feel? Do you think it might be stay with ESPN? Are we going to get something splintered here? What's kind of your vibe and on what would be best too for the sport?
Yeah. Well, there's been a lot of talk about getting away from the pay-per-view model, which I find very interesting because I don't know if that's quite the direction that they're going to go, but it seems like they're very open to it. I think we're going to see them stay with ESPN in some form, right? If it's for pay-per-views, I can imagine the pay-per-view staying with ESPN and then the fight nights going somewhere else. Netflix has obviously been in discussions, but what I've heard recently is that they're opening up to other options. There's stronger options coming as well, just because of the model that ESPN might do. Because if they went with Netflix, the talks about, are they going all on Netflix or just fight nights on Netflix, subscription based? There's just so many revolving doors that every time that I've talked to somebody higher up than me, they've given me a different answer. So I really don't know what direction they're going. I think that the UFC is doing the right thing and just being open to every opportunity. But I have heard this. They might not necessarily go with the most profitable deal. That even though one of these deals might be paying them more money, if they don't think it's what's best for growing the sport and the fan base, they might push that one aside, which I thought was interesting because you would think the UFC is all about the money. But they're saying it's not about the money in this. When they want good money, they're asking for a lot of money. But if another deal makes more sense, they'll push the big money one away.
Yeah. I mean, if what's being discussed or what they had kind of been leaked out there, what their hopes were, $1 billion a year annually from whatever deal it is. I mean, if it's the difference between $1 billion and $1.1 billion and you feel like the sport can be significantly, you know, improved by some of that, I think hopefully they make the right decision and kind of prioritize the sport. And it'd be interesting too, like I saw John Anixay on the Hall of Fame red carpet last week or the week before, whenever that was, the product could probably be improved with a shaved down schedule, maybe like taking it from 43 events to 35. What would be your stance on that? I know it's so tough because we sit here on one side and as the viewer and the people involved, maybe we think it would give everything more life to breathe, but we know there's 700 fighters on roster who need 2 to 3 fights a year. So inherently us saying they need to chop off 10 events is less opportunities for fighters. So like, you don't, you're being anti-fighter a little bit in that way, but it's a hard balance because, you know, if you oversaturate the sport and, you know, the whole interest goes down, then the opportunities for those fighters might not be there years down the line anyways. So
it's you're spot on. It's such a double-edged sword because John Anik is right. You know, if we narrow down the roster and put on less events, we'd have some better events. And that's true. But just to your point, I mean, it's all these fighters are looking to fight as many times as year. All these production staff, analysts, talent, they're all want to work every weekend. And if everybody's making more money because there's more events, but we're putting out a slightly less product, which direction do you go? Do you only put out a better product, but now everyone across the board is making less money? It really is a double-edged sword. And that's why I tell people all the time, like, look, if there's an Apex card and it's not a banger, you still get free fights that you get to watch, relatively free fights you get to watch when there's nothing else on TV sometimes. And you're getting these. So a lot of times we get great fights when it doesn't look like it's a stacked card. I would rather personally see fights on every single weekend and them not be the most entertaining main cards now and then than only have them every other weekend and we narrow down the roster.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's a near impossible balance because you never know which one of these guys you're watching on, you know, a quote unquote dull card could be something in a couple of years. And they obviously need that experience and that cage time and everything. So it's all building towards something. And you hope this, maybe this is, kind of a lull period, and, you know, some of these guys in the next 2-3 years start to explode, and then no one's talking about oversaturation at all because the product is so good. But it's a tricky one, and it will definitely depend on where it ends up. I know I can't find her name here, but one of the higher up executives, I think, was cage side with Dana and Hunter at UFC 317. So they're close by and they're present, and we'll see, you know, if things are getting finalized. But yeah, this next TV deal is going to be very significant for the sport, in my opinion, because whether it's splintered across and we get a step up on Netflix, that's can all be good. But yeah, it'll be fascinating. Some big decisions here.
I think as much as weird as it would be to not have a pay-per-view model, that seems like a win for the fans. If they go, okay, everybody in the world already has Netflix. And if they went with Netflix across the board and you're not paying, can you imagine just like it's UFC 320? Yeah. Pay-per-view just on Netflix.
I know it's crazy for me. Like, you know, we get it. I don't know if it's the full thing for WWE yet, because I know they still have some expiring deals, but like here it's all on Netflix now, and you just pull it up and it's just in front of you all the time, and it's just ingrained with the whole thing. So it would be fascinating to see if UFC could get to that point. Feel like they might try to drag pay-per-view on for one more deal, but we'll ultimately see what happens. Answers will be coming soon. Alan, did you have any more things on your list here?
No, I mean, White House was the thing that's on my mind the most. It look, if we get these fights or not, just if Dana and Trump talking about this gets the possibility of John Jones, Conor McGregor, anybody else who's on the fence about ever fighting again to possibly come back, then it was a good thing. If it's for a made-up belt, depending who they fight, it doesn't matter to me. You get these people to fight, the stars to come back, then it's a win-win for everyone. So I do hope that it happens.
Yeah, me too. Last thing I just had on my list here was just wanted to give a shout out to the UFC Abu Dhabi card that's scheduled a few weeks from now. We'll obviously talk more about it as we get closer, but man, that lineup is getting insane. Some great debuts. Aaron Pico against Movsar Abloya.
Oh, yeah.
Signed Marcos Buchecha from ONE Championship, and he'll be debuting against Martin Budai on that card. So that's an absolute banger. And then obviously Whitaker versus De Ritter in the main event. What else do we got here? Piotr Jan versus Marcus McGee.
Yeah.
Bryce Mitchell dropping to bantamweight against Saeed Nurmagomedov. So yeah, there's good stuff all across the board here. Abu Dhabi's getting a banger.
Aaron Pico, I think that's one of the most excited signings that I've been excited about.
Yeah,
in a long time. This guy.
Shout out to the UFC. People are kind of being like, you know, they're letting some of the free agents slip through their fingers in like recent years, but they've been on a run of lately, scooping up all the people we want to see in here. So
there was a time where the UFC almost felt like, no, we don't want these fighters that came from another organization, right? And then if they brought them in, maybe they wanted to make a point of it by giving them a tough matchup. But now they're very good about changing their ways and saying, let's acquire these guys if they're still young. And look, Pitbull came a little bit too late in his career. We still have yet to see what he could do. I think he just kind of dropped the ball in his UFC debut. I think we're going to see better fights out of him in the near future. I think he's fighting on UFC 318 in New Orleans, right?
Stan Ige.
So we get that. That's a fantastic matchup. But going back to Aaron Pico, this guy is still young enough, good enough, has the right mindset. Going up against a killer and Movsar Abloya, these guys are both in, we were talking about it before the show, in amazing shape. I mean, these guys have veins coming out of the necks right now. So, but he's a guy that I think just a smart signing and good on the UFC, as you said, finding these young guys, these talent that's in other organizations of being like, you know what, let's acquire them and let's see what they could do. And let's try to build them rather than give them, well, I'd say give them the toughest matchup. They did give them the toughest matchup, but I think they see potential in them rather than try to one-off get done with them.
Completely agree. And yeah, there was a time, you know, for years, Dana and would always say Lorenzo Fertitta, UFC, whereas where all the best fighters in the world compete and we want them all here. And felt like maybe there was a time it strayed away from that a little bit. There was other organizations signing a lot of people, Bellator, PFL, but it's seems like right now it's kind of back to where it always has been and should be in terms of them being able to bring in the best people. And I guess before I get you out of here, Alan, no pay-per-view in September, but we do have to talk about quickly the August pay-per-view. It's a huge one. Middleweight title on the line. Hamzat Chimaev challenging Dricus du Plessis August 16th at UFC 319. I mean, this is the one. I'm very hyped for Max Holloway and Dustin Poirier, but for the summer schedule, Dricus and Hamzat is the one. I can't wait for this fight.
That's such a good, I mean, it's just two rams locking horns right there. Dricus du Plessis, I think, has been like an overachiever his entire career. A lot of us did not think that he was going to get as far as he did, and he's proven us wrong. Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of people talk that are in my position as well, guys like Dean Thomas and others, that when it comes to mental warfare, Dricus du Plessis might be the strongest guy in the UFC at this moment. You know, just the subtle things that he had, the way that he broke Sean Strickland, and the way that he has said things to Israel Adesanya. I mean, the way that he wins those small battles, and he gets, even if they act like he didn't get to them, it you could see that it gets to them. Like, we're physically able to see that he struck a chord with them, and he has no care. Like, he laughs it off out loud. He wins these small battles. He shows up. He's a guy that's just durable, always comes forward and has the cardio. And that's going to be the biggest test against Khamzat. If Khamzat can't get him out of there early, I think you're going to see him win some of these grappling changes. But if he can't get him out of there in the first and the second, does then Dricus du Plessis start to take over in those later rounds and do what he's done to every other fighter and eventually get him out of there?
I'm intrigued, especially Khamzat has been in the United States for a few weeks now, and he's currently in California training with Sam Calavita, who obviously has fame working with TJ Dillashaw and many others in MMA. And he's one of the best strength and conditioning coaches, from what I've heard, in the world. So it'll be fascinating to see how that work impacts his conditioning, his preparedness. But it seems like he's doing everything right and at least trying to shut up all the questions about his cardio, which seems to be one of the big things leading into this fight if it gets to the fourth and fifth rounds.
I've always said cardio is the one thing that you have full control over, right? Because Dang. You could work as much boxing as you can. You're only going to be able to get as good as you can in segments in boxing. Each camp, you get a little bit better. But cardio, you could train full blast all the time and get your lung capacity and your muscle fatigue to its top ability. It's the one thing that you have complete control over. But what a lot of times fighters have trouble changing is their fighting style. Khamzat Chimaev is a guy that he goes full blast for those first couple of rounds, and he's trying to get you out of there. And even if you're in tremendous shape, even if you raise your bar of cardio from an 8 to a 9 to a 10, you're going to get tired. It's about how fast do you recover, or how fast do you manage those moments of being tired. So for me, he's doing all the right things, as you said, making sure no stone is left unturned. But he might have to make an adjustment in this fight, where if he can't get him out of there, he needs to find these pockets to go hard and then kind of calm down. Go hard, calm down. Because if he goes full blast again and then we see everything exhausted and now he has to fight stand up on the feet, I feel like that's a point where Dricus du Plessis could find some areas to expose him.
Truly can't wait for that fight. Alan, I know you're working UFC Nashville this weekend. Give me one thing. What has your interest that you're intrigued by for this card, which is headlined by Derek Lewis, Tolshin Teixeira? We have a Stephen Wonderboy Thompson versus Bonfim main event. I think some Nate the Train action on there. What captivates you most going into this fight card?
Well, I think it's you got to go with the main event heavyweights for me. Derek Lewis, he's what, 40, 41 right now? 40. End of his career. Tolshin Teixeira. This guy is undefeated. Finished every one of his fights. I mean, a win here, a knockout over Derek Lewis, this is a guy that could be in title contention in one or two more fights. So I think, is he the new young gun in the heavyweight division? And they certainly need it. John Jones is gone. Tom Aspinall might fight Cyril Gane. Who's next after that, right? Do we have rematches? Do we put Alexander Volkov in there? There's a couple of names, but we need more names. And this could be the young guy that could be that name in a title fight within a year's time. We could see this guy fighting for a belt.
Yeah, especially because Tom Aspinall did say recently, like, his goal is to beat all the top 10 ranked heavyweights in the next 12 months. He's already beat six of them. And Derek Lewis is one of the few he has not fought. So if he gets a win, I think we can maybe see another Derek Lewis title fight at some point here. But yeah, Teixeira, we'll see his potential. I feel like we've seen this spot with Derek Lewis many times over the years, like, you know, the guy coming up and we'll see if he can break through, or, you know, not trying to designate Derek as the gatekeeper here, because I think he's a little more than that, given all his wins and his knockouts. But yeah, this will be kind of one to say, is there a new guy, or are we going to continue to see the replayed tracks in the heavyweight division maybe for a bit longer here? So that one will be interesting, Alan. I appreciate you joining here on the Bonfires. What else do you have coming up besides Nashville over these next couple months here?
Right now, my mind is just locked on Nashville this weekend. I've got obviously 318. I'm going to be working the desk for ESPN for Dustin Poirier's fight, which I'm super excited just to be involved in his retirement fight.
Yeah. Who else do they have on there with you? Do you know yet?
I don't know yet, but I would imagine it's going to be like Chael Sonnen and Anthony Smith.
I'm imagining Teddy Atlas out there too or something. I know he goes way back with Dustin, so I can see
that. That would be you would think so, right? That would be fantastic. I haven't worked with Teddy yet, so that would be an honor for me. But Power Slap is also going down in New Orleans on Friday. Everybody's favorite fight organization, Power Slap. Shout out to them. They get a lot of shit, but they're actually a lot of fun, and I get to call that one the whole card for the first time. A lot of times I'll go, and me and Mike will kind of piggyback off of one another. I'll do the early prelims. He'll do the main card stuff because there's so many fights. I mean, they'll put like 25 freaking fights on these Power Slap cards, and it's just a lot to manage by yourself. But Mike has obligations. I'm going there with Dan Haley, calling all the Power Slap in New Orleans on Friday night, doing the 318 card on Saturday. So it's just, I'm excited. It's going to be a crazy weekend or entire week next week in New Orleans.
Yeah, I've heard from some people at the UFC that the New Orleans Commission, the city council, they're trying to make this feel like a very special event for everyone. So I've never been to New Orleans before. I can't wait to be there next week. I'll see you there, Alan.
Awesome.
I will definitely catch up in person. So I appreciate you being here on the Bonfire. Everyone follow this man on social media. Is at Alan Jobin. And I'm going to take a quick break and I'll be right back to wrap things up. That does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Alan once again for his time. No surprise why he is one of the UFC's top analysts, and we see him on the desk so often on their programming. Appreciate him being here and sharing some of his knowledge and feelings and opinions. Would love to know what you guys thought about everything we discussed. Please make sure to leave a comment, a subscription, a like, all that type of stuff. It means a lot as we continue to build things here on the Bonfire. I feel like I've had a nice stretch of shows here, and we'll try to keep it going heading into UFC 318 next week, where I will be. It's going to be an emotional one, I think, for many in the MMA community. No one wants to see Max Holloway or Dustin Poirier take a loss at this stages of their careers, but that is the sport. One man will fall, and I'll be there to witness it all and hopefully give you guys some great coverage. But first, we must get through UFC Nashville. Make sure to keep it locked to MMA Junkie for all your coverage needs as usual. Thank you so much to my man Kamikaze for producing the show as always. And until next week, I will see you all back here on the Bonfire.